Blog Talk Radio.
March 10th, 2014, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday to you. I hope it's a great day wherever you are. You know, if we didn't know better, we'd let this crazy weather rule and run our attitudes, but oh no, we are not going to do that. We have to have a sunshiny view even when it's cloudy outside. We have to speak that we know the sun will come out tomorrow in some cases, or maybe even later today. Even if it's raining, well, we know the rain doesn't last always. Sounds like I'm preaching, huh? Well, yeah, maybe a little bit. And if you still are one of those folks who are dealing with that snow, well, you know what? The words of a song come to mind, and maybe you'll remember it. See if you recognize these words. Just remember, in the winter, far beneath the bitter snows, lies the seed that with the sun's love in the spring becomes the rose. Yeah, that's from The Road. Now, that's how you keep it 100 optimistic, right? Yes, indeed. Know that the sun is coming out, coming soon, because spring is up on us. And how apropos those words are for the story you are about to hear, at least I'm hoping so. My guest and I have not yet connected this morning into the studio. I think there may have been a misunderstanding about the different time zones, but let's hope she'll get on the line with us in the next minute or so. But in essence, my guest faced a winter in her life. She found herself in some bitter cold circumstances that were difficult and challenging. However, she did rise from it, and she bloomed as well. And what a beautiful flower she is. Her name's Ophelia, and today she's going to tell us how she didn't give up in the midst of her personal trials as a victim of domestic abuse, and how she stayed in the ring and became a champion in her own life. But before we do that, as I said, she's not on the line yet. Some of you may recognize that I did a series on domestic violence recently. I have been trying to do my part to get some information out there to help victims and their families know that there is more help than ever available to them. So often victims will feel that there is just no way out of those circumstances for fear, self-doubt, and other reasons. And so I wanted to make these shows become a wake-up call to those who may not realize that there are just an abundant resources out there, people, agencies who can come to your aid, who can help you find the sunshine on the other side of these very difficult circumstances, for sure. I also looked at some statistics this morning that are really so very alarming. I looked at a website called thefamilyplace.org, and it informs us that the FBI says that family violence is the leading cause of injury to women. And if that's not enough of a reason to bring more awareness to this issue for women, their children, for families, for individuals who are directly and indirectly involved, I'd say that that's definitely one of the main themes and purpose behind getting more information out. That's a very startling statistic. And also, the probably hardest is 24 people per minute are victims of rape, violence, and or stalking. And that's pretty incredible as well. Another statistic that I found from Womenkind, Inc. was that 70% of children of women abused are also abused. 20% of those children are sexually abused. I also learned that $4.1 billion each year are spent in direct health care costs for victims and families of domestic violence. $1.8 billion associated with loss of productivity and death regarding victims of domestic violence. So as I said to you, those are very alarming statistics and definitely things that we need to be very, very aware of. Well, it looks like my guest has somehow we've got our wires crossed regarding the time for the show. So what I am going to do is do a wrap right now and get her on the line and see if we can go into our interview sometime within the next hour. So I'm going to ask you not to end this conversation with me, but if you could please just put it on pause. I promise to get back with you with a full show and interview very, very shortly. Thank you so much for tuning in. Keep your ears peeled because I'll be right back. Good morning. Is this Ophelia?
Yes, it's only 9:38 my time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think I didn't realize that we had a two-hour span between Central and Pacific. So, goodness gracious. Well, I was about to just wrap the show, but I'm glad that that didn't happen. So I want to go ahead and just say a little bit again about what I was saying to get you introed. I said that you had experienced some domestic violence issues in your own life, and I said how you have risen from it and you've bloomed and you've become a beautiful flower in the midst of all of that. And I just shared some of the kind of horrifying, if not very horrifying, statistics of those who have experienced domestic violence. And it is one of those issues that I guess if we, you know, we know that there's a lot of help, but it certainly seems like it may even be somewhat on the rise. 24 people per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, and or stalking, and that's just horrible when you hear numbers like that. But anyway, Ophelia, I want to thank you so much, and I apologize that there were some time confusion on when I needed you to be in the saddle for the show. But let's go ahead and get ourselves rolling in the conversation.
Okay.
I entitled this show Ophelia's story, There's Life When You Leave. And I first want to, again, thank you for being willing to be open enough to share some of these very personal, intimate details of what you went through as a victim of domestic violence. So what I want to start with, I'll share just quickly again some of the things I said about the stats. The FBI says that family violence is the leading cause of injury to women. 70% of children of women abused are also abused. 20% are sexually abused. There's a direct health care cost of $4.1 billion directly related to victims of domestic violence. $1.8 billion associated with loss of productivity and death and for victims. So that says a lot. What I want to ask you, you beat the odds of all of the distress that comes along with it. You were one of the ones who decided to fight back in your own way and got yourself free of that. So what I want you to tell us as we start is how you found yourself in the first situation with the guy with whom you experienced this. How did you meet?
Okay, well, there's been several. And it was the last.
Let's just start with the first time.
Oh, the first one, okay.
Yeah, let's start with the first time.
Okay, the first time. I went to college, and it was the first time I was away from home, and I was probably within the first 2 months that I was there. I believe this is when I met him, and I fell in love with him quickly. He was charming. He was. I went to a university called Frostburg State University for a couple years, and I went to University of Maryland. But this is where I met him at my first university, which was Frostburg. And so he was the captain of the basketball team and Mr. Frostburg. Everyone loved him. He was just so intelligent and articulate and charming, and he appeared to be perfect. You know, I was still young, and I put him up on a pedestal, and like I said, I fell very quickly and deeply. And then as we were in the relationship, within the first month, he started slowly criticizing me and putting me down and saying things in front of people. And then it evolved to when we were out, he would start drinking more than what I was used to seeing him do. And then he became even more verbally abusive. And then it evolved to him grabbing my arm, like when it was time to go, when it was time to leave the restaurant or the bar or the party, he would grab my arm and tell me, we need to go. So that's how it evolved. That's how it started.
So you were very young. Sounds like you were 18, 19 years old.
Yes.
With your first experience. And
yes.
Because you were so enamored with this guy, Ophelia, it sounds like you probably went along with this for a time.
Yes, I did. And because you don't even realize what's happening, you don't go into the relationship saying, wow, this is toxic. I don't even think I had that understanding yet, because I was so young. And it was just like, it was so gradual, and I remember the first time he hit me was we were at a, I was supposed to meet him at a bar, and a dance bar, and when I got there, he looked at me and said, why are you dressed like that? I was dressed up. I was dressed up like in a business suit. It wasn't provocative or anything. Not that that should even matter. But he was used to me seeing me in jeans and a T-shirt. So I was dressed up in high heels and kind of a business suit-looking thing. And so he said, I can't believe you're trying to show off for other men. So he grabbed me and pushed me outside, and I started running. He chased me down the hill, and I was yelling at him. I said, please, you know, don't hurt me. And he said, you're a crazy bitch. And so I cursed at him, and that's when he punched me in the face and knocked me out on the ground.
And you were alone in those circumstances? No, did anybody come to your aid at all?
I was alone. What had happened was I hit my head on a rock, and I remember it was the first time I've ever experienced, you know, seeing my life flash by me. It was really strange. You know, I saw from my childhood up into that moment. And so I was actually still conscious. And I think a few minutes went by as my boyfriend at the time, my boyfriend was standing over me, still yelling at me. And I think a few minutes passed by, and that's when a friend of mine from about 200 feet away saw what was going on, and that's when he started running down the hill and pursuing my boyfriend. And he's the one who brought me to the hospital that night. So I was lucky.
How long did that...
Go ahead.
You were lucky
what
that...
I was lucky that he was there, my friend.
Yes, yes. So how long did that relationship continue?
That relationship I allowed to continue for another year after that. I forgave him.
Even after such a severe... Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And after you ended it, how were you able to get out of that relationship, that first one, with success?
You have to excuse me. I haven't had my coffee. I was going to drink it before 10:30. Okay, so let me refocus here. And it's been quite a while since I've talked about this boyfriend. I think it's making me a little more emotional than I thought. But
I'm hoping that you can get through this conversation.
I will.
Okay.
So your question.
Well,
sorry,
I know
Silver.
That you
Absolutely.
May not remember exactly exact details, and I'm really not thinking that you can remember each play-by-play. I'm really asking that what came to your mind that says, okay, I've got to get away from this guy?
With him, we'll call him Tom. With Tom, we had gone on a vacation, and his abuse had escalated so bad where he was kicking me. He kicked me under a bed, and I remember just being beyond scared of him, and I remember reaching out to friends asking them, how do I get out? And they gave me advice, and my mother and my father wouldn't allow me to see him anymore. So at that age, I feel I didn't even have the real willpower to leave. He had a really strong hold on me, but the only reason I left was no one allowed me to see him. And somehow I got into another relationship. I was still my self-esteem was so low, and I don't think I had the inner strength to do it on my own at all. And I still hadn't learned my lesson, because as I told you, I got into a couple of other relationships like that.
Okay. I'd like to go ahead and go in that direction.
Okay.
So when you have experienced, and God, I'm just so sorry that, I mean, when I get to know people and even those that don't know, my gut just wrenches when I hear these stories of this harm that's been put upon you. But I, again, appreciate you, as difficult as I hear that it is, that you're willing to share. But I'd like for you to tell us, how did you go into another circumstance like that and stay once or twice or three times before you get to the point where you begin to see the irregularities and the dysfunction in this type of relationship? So you went from Tom to a couple of more circumstances, and I believe that you told me at one point you were even in a marriage that had the same symptoms.
Can I fast forward to that one?
Sure.
Can I tell everyone about my last encounter with an abusive man? So this was, I'm 44 now, and this is when I was 30. I was also in another vulnerable time in my life, and, you know, I've dealt with abuse of different kinds as a child. So I have been through a lot of depression in my life and low self-esteem. And so when, at age 30, obviously I still hadn't resolved these issues, and I still wasn't trying to deal with them, my own issues of depression and self-esteem. So I was very vulnerable, and I met my husband at a restaurant, and instantly I fell for him, maybe because I was lonely, but he was so handsome, and he was so charming. He said all the right things. You know, talking about this, it just reminds me of how naive I was back then. And I'm trying to be gentle on myself, thinking of, you know, the old me, and trying not to be critical. I hear myself being critical of myself the way I was, so I have to still remind myself to be kind to myself, but as I'm telling the story. So,
well, let me say something to you, Ophelia. I don't feel that you are sounding that way, and please know that the platform that I've created is a platform of love. It is not meant to make your situation seem like I'm trying to put your business out there or whatever. I think you know well enough to know that my goals are to inspire help to happen in lives, to inspire healing. And even in this conversation, it is my hope that even with you being vocal as you are about it, if that challenge, that feels like a challenge to you in the midst of this conversation, look at it as another way of releasing whatever needs to be released, and forgiving yourself in the process, because we all make mistakes that we wish we could go back and fix for whatever reason, whether we feel that we were being a naive or whatever the case may be. But we have to forgive ourselves, and I don't care if it was last week, you still have to do the same thing, even as a grown-up adult woman. It doesn't matter. So please know that this platform is meant to be one of help and love for yourself and for anybody else who is listening and may be experiencing something and wondering how do you find what you need to in your own heart to have the courage to leave. So
that's
just
true.
Wanted to
Thank
say that
you
before
that.
You continue.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. And I know that's exactly what it is, and that's the only reason you're probably, I mean, you are the first person who's, I mean, I trust you. I'm trying to say I trust you, and that's why I'm on this phone call now sharing my story.
Yes,
I really
I know
do
that.
Help. I hope other people can relate to what I'm saying, and it can help them. So
it
I fell in love instantly with him. Again, another, you know, Prince Charming. didn't know he was a monster. And so it took about a year of being in a relationship with him before he asked me to marry him. And there were signs, even when I said yes. He hadn't physically hurt me yet, but he was like Tom, he was becoming verbally abusive. And I rationalize. What you end up doing is rationalizing everything. And when your self-esteem is low and you don't truly love yourself, you blame yourself. Every time he would criticize me, I would say to myself, well, he had a reason. You know, I'm not doing this perfect, or I'm not doing that perfect. And my verbiage, my inner dialogue at that age and before that was always trying to be perfect. And I didn't even realize nothing's perfect. You know, logically now I know no one's perfect. And I remember, though, that's what I kept saying to myself. I'm not being perfect enough. I'm not doing this perfect. So, of course, he's criticizing me. So he was in the military, and we got married in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area where I was raised, but we moved. We relocated to Texas, where I had no friends. So once we moved and were married, I became pregnant, and that's when his drinking also increased. And that's when he became more verbally abusive, and that's when he started hitting me. And it took, we were only married for about a year, and in that year he beat me up, and I had to call the police. He did that about four times. And actually, the fourth time wasn't when I left. What made me finally leave was I came home one day and I wanted to look through, you know, my childhood pictures. I had a box of about 75% of my childhood pictures were in that box. Another 25% I hid somewhere else. But in that box, I went under the bed to just, you know, look at these pictures, and the box was empty. And I called him and I asked him what happened to these pictures, and he told me while he was at work, he told me that he had gotten rid of them. He burned them because there was no reason for me to dwell on my past, and no one loved me the way he loved me. And that's when it hit me so hard that this man is crazy. He has his own issues. It has nothing to do with me, and this is unacceptable. And what's interesting, though, is in that box, the empty box, there was still one picture left. Somehow it got stuck in the bottom of the cardboard. So I pulled out that picture, and it was a picture of me in first grade, and I looked so happy, so confident. Just, it reminded me that I want to take care of this person.
Mm-hmm.
This person is worthy.
Yes, yes.
And so, at that moment, I packed up all my things. I knew there was still many hours left before he would come home. So I packed everything, put in my car, and I withdrew. All we had in the bank was $200. And I didn't care that it was our money. I even actually thought for a moment, should I just take out half, which would have left me with $100. And I thought, no, I don't care. I'm taking out the whole $200. And I got in my car, and I drove around and I slept in my car for 2 days. And I was somehow, it was a small town, I somehow found a place that would accept just $100 for me to live in this little efficiency. And that same week, I was able to just find a job. And I'm not sure. I don't remember if I borrowed any extra money from anyone. But I was definitely struggling financially, but I didn't care. I was happier.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was get away from him.
And I'm so glad that you did. We're going to take a minute there. We have a caller who wants to make a comment. So I'll give you a moment to take a breath.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing today? Thank you for joining the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. And first, I want to say, Ophelia, I salute you for being courageous enough to come on here and share your story. It's going to be pivotal to women that are in situations like yours that don't see a way out, but your story is helping them understand that they do have a way out.
Yes.
And I just thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot.
And it's awesome because there are more women in these situations than I think most people realize. And a lot of times you kind of feel like you don't have a way, especially if you don't have income, if you have children and that type of thing.
But right.
One of the things we have to remember is if we have we have our own ability to do things, doors will open up for us once we take a step, and God is always there for us.
Yes.
And we have more people in our corner than we realize most of the time.
Yes.
One thing that I do want to say, my situation is not similar to yours. It was a lot of mental or verbal abuse, which at times can be worse.
Yeah.
Because it does impact your self-esteem in ways. And I've always been a woman who has had a lot of self-esteem until over for many years in a marriage that kind of tore it down for me.
Mm.
And it kind of pushed me to kind of really utilize all of my toolbox, my gifts, my talents and whatnot to create income to get myself away from it. And that's what I had to do for myself.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting, we have to look at sometimes, hurt people hurt people.
Yes.
You're leaving, and you hit on something that was really important. You said that those were his issues and not yours.
Mm.
And that's key.
Yes.
It wasn't about you that he was behaving like he was. Those are his stuff.
Yes.
And until he identifies it, owns it, does the work to fix it, you can't fix it.
No.
All you can do is get away from it to save yourself and your child.
Yes.
And bless him along that path of his growth, but continue to go on yours.
Yes.
Because it's about not holding any ought towards them for their stuff, because that's their stuff and God will deal with that. But then God helps you to recover you. When you get away from that.
I'm glad you mentioned God, because that's what I was going to talk about next. But go ahead.
But I just wanted to share that, and thank you for being courageous enough to come on here and share that.
Thank you so much. It means the world to hear that from you. Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I appreciate
thank you so
those
much for
comments.
Having me on.
Thank you, too. You be blessed.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, Ophelia, as you can see, as I said, your courage will have a great ripple effect. And so I, again, applaud you as well. Now, you have found life after you left, and I know that there is so much more to your story. And anybody who has heard what we have discussed so far, it isn't hard to just put a picture together to know that it was a very, very, very difficult thing for you.
Yes. Yes.
But the great news is you found the fortitude and you found the courage to find your way out, to fight your own fight out of it. So let's talk about that. It sounds like faith was your primary platform.
Yes. I somehow forgot to mention that because of the abuse, I lost the child at 4 months. And so that was another thing I was dealing with. And I grew up in a family who are Buddhists, and they weren't even practicing Buddhists. So I didn't know much about Buddhism or God, and basically I just didn't believe in anything. I didn't have faith in anything. And as I told you guys, after I left and found a job and found the little efficiency apartment, I was experiencing the loneliness, the withdrawals of not being with anyone anymore. And, you know, I've always gone from one relationship to another. And I remember feeling so empty. A part of me felt proud that I was able to get out and proud of myself, but and happy that I was no longer having to fear, you know, the verbal and the physical abuse. But another part of me was so empty, and I remember praying or saying to God, I said, if there is a God, I don't believe you're there. I mean, I was actually being really, I was going through an angry stage also. So there were a lot of emotions, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And then one day when I was feeling the most pain, I was like cursing at God and saying, you know, I don't believe in you. And if you were there, you would help me. And I remember screaming out, if you're there, you'd give me wholeness. You would show me a way to find wholeness in my life because I'm so empty. And so the next morning I went out to my car and there was a book on the ground. And it was covered with dirt. And I was like, this is weird. You know, this is, where did this book come from? I didn't see that book before. So I this was in front of my place, and I bent down and I picked up the book and I wiped off the dirt, and it was a book called Struggling for Wholeness. So God said, you know what?
Wow.
you cursed at me, girl.
Wow.
And I've been trying to show you signs for a long time. You really needed a major sign, so here it is. And that book was written by twin girls. I think they were 20 years old, 20-something years old. They were twins. And they both had depression, and they both had been through all kinds of abuse in their life. And it was written by them on how to sort of get through all of that through faith and find their wholeness. So that was the changing. That was a changing moment in my life. And I had signs.
When did you?
Go ahead.
No, you finish.
Oh, so after that, I continue to have so many signs from God, and I continue to, including lots of voices in my head. How do I say it without sounding crazy? There were like voices of words of wisdom in my own mind that didn't come from me, things that I wouldn't have never said to myself, and I knew it was God. And so that's when I started having faith, and that's when life started going in a positive direction for me.
How long was it, Ophelia, before you stepped into a relationship with a better expectation and a healthier consciousness about what love looks like?
It was actually about 8 months later. You know, I had imagined that it would take about 10 years. And I remember thinking, ideally, it would be the healthiest for me to wait a couple years or 2 or 3 years to be happy being alone. But that's not what happened. It was about 8 months until I reconnected with a childhood crush, and we were in a relationship together. And through my faith and through trying very hard to keep close communication with family and friends, I felt I was healthy enough to go into another relationship. And I looked for the signs of, you know, another man who might be a verbally abusive or physically abusive, and he was a good man. You know, thank God, somehow, because I found love with myself, or I was on that path of loving myself, I found a good man. We didn't last. We actually stayed together for about 4 years. We didn't last because we grew apart, not because of any type of abuse.
But it was a wonderful place for you to take the time to learn a lot about what relationships really are made of, it sounds like.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was meant for you to grow there.
Yes, it was. This man gave me freedom. He was very accepting of who I was, very loving. He even accepted the fact that I was still closed off here and there. It's, you know, for some people, you know, it's like I said to you the other day when we were talking, a life is not like a movie. It's not, you know, a pretty package. And in a movie, that relationship would have been, you know, my happily ever after. You know, and in that 8 months before we got together, I would have been totally healed and 100%, you know, in love with myself and totally just ready for, you know, marriage till the day I died. But that wasn't the case. I still had my issues throughout the relationship of being a little closed off sometimes, being jittery, you know, I feel like I had post-traumatic stress disorder that I still didn't deal with totally. I had gone to counseling on and off, but I didn't stick with it. The counseling helped me, but it didn't cure me. You know, I'm still not 100% cured now, but man, I'm a million miles away from where I was. And
it's interesting you say that, Ophelia.
Yeah.
Because I read yesterday a story of a woman who I jotted her name down because her story was actually printed by another online author. The woman that was the victim of the abuse, her name was Leslie Morgan Steiner, and she said just what you said. She wasn't quite there yet. There meaning where she felt she should be as far as being involved in a healthy way emotionally and psychologically in a relationship. And, you know, that kind of broke my heart too because, you know, I guess the best word I come up with is distress that you feel in those circumstances has had such wear on those places in you. But she said the same thing that you just said, and I guess it's my hope and prayer because you both are courageous, and so many other women who have stories like yours deserve to be fully present in a relationship and understand every aspect of what being in love represents and is in giving and receiving. So you may be more there than you realize. I know that you are on the brink of another wedding in about another year.
The bottom line for me is, even though there's, you know, as it even shows now, you know, I'm having a difficult time talking about those things. That they, I think the bottom line for me is overall, and if I were to give a percentage, I would say I feel like 90-some percent of me is guided by faith and not guided by fear. And my whole life, I was guided by fear.
That's awesome.
And that's why I was driven by fear and not where I am now, where I'm driven by purpose and faith and love. And I open my heart is so open. And if there are some parts that are still healing, trying to heal, I'm able to function. I'm able to love, give love, and I'm able to receive love. And the man I'm with now, Denny, it's a very healthy love and a very accepting one. And it's founded on trust. You know, it's our foundation is trust. I've never had this kind of trust ever, and it's a wonderful feeling. But so, you know, if it may not be 100% yet, I don't know if it'll ever be 100%, because we're also talking about my life where, you know, I was born into dysfunction. I don't know if that ever 100% goes away, but there's some days there can still be a struggle, but that doesn't mean I'm failing or I should give up or that my life's a failure, because overall I've come so far, and I love what I do, which is, you know, training dogs, and I love my relationship, and I'm even able to be closer with girlfriends. I've had walls up with everyone my entire life. And through God and through faith, through everything I've been through, and I just feel like I'm in a place where I've opened my heart up to fully living in light and not in darkness. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling.
And that's exactly what I wanted people to hear, to know, to expect, to anticipate, to plan for, even in the midst of such a terrible crisis. It is a hard thing, and I know that there are things just so deeply in your memories, but you are winning, Ophelia, and I know that you know that, and I again appreciate that you have taken the time to share your story. I want to talk about one thing before we wrap up, because it was so eye-opening for me when you said this to me the other day. You said to me that you are able to tell when you meet other women who are experiencing what you are talking about. And I found that very just enlightening, because when I experienced this with other women, and it wasn't, you asked me if I had, and I told you I had not, but I had people that I know love dearly and deeply who have, and I wish I could have seen something or sensed something that you said you saw. But I didn't. Not until some of these things were just in a terrible place in their lives. But what is it that you recognize, and tell me why.
This is hard to explain because it's so intuitive. I recognize other women who are similar to me. And, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive for most people because it's the woman, usually, who's not withdrawn and shy and quiet and hiding in their, you know, curled up in a ball in their bedroom. It's the women like me who seem, when you see me on the streets, I look like I'm always happy. I'm smiling a lot. I'm laughing a lot. I use, maybe it's a defense mechanism, but I'm, you know, I'm always cracking jokes or I'm laughing all the time. when I was going through all these things, I was the one who was the craziest and so easy to laugh and so easy to smile, but I was hiding the pain in my eyes. If you really look in a woman's eyes, a woman like me who's always joking and or quote unquote center of attention or you know the quote unquote life of the party, a lot of times you look in that person's eyes, you'll see the sadness. If they're going through what I was going through, if you really look at them, you'll see the sadness in their eyes. That's all I can say. I mean, they're not doing anything so obvious, you know. They're not walking around with their heads down or anything like that. It's usually the jovial ones. But what I was telling you the other day is somehow women who have come from abused families, you attract other women like that. And so I've attracted a lot of women who've gone through a lot of pain like myself. And if it's someone who's, I've noticed, in my opinion, I've noticed if it's someone who's not gone through what I've gone through, they're very even keel and seemingly very normal and just, you know, upbeat, and it's easy for them to show when they're angry or show when they just have the normal emotions and they're not afraid of showing it out in public. People with pain are always trying to hide that pain, so you won't see them get angry. They're the ones that are pleasant all the time. And I'm not trying to generalize. I'm just saying from what I've seen. And it's very, very hard to articulate how I can see, but I sense it. And women like me who are listening can probably relate that they attract other women. You know, I befriend someone and then I can tell that they've gone through the same thing, and after we become friends, they're like, oh my God, you know, just like you, I was also abused when I was younger. I had an alcoholic father. But like I told you the other day, most of these women I've come across who've been in abusive relationships in their adulthood, they were abused as children. And it becomes a cycle. They are trying to subconsciously resolve. There's two things. They're trying to consciously resolve that issue from their childhood so they keep meeting the same type of person. And the second thing is subconsciously they're used to that. That's all we've seen. That's all we know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my father was an alcoholic. And so I was attracted to alcoholic men.
My goodness. Ophelia, let me ask you something. We have a couple of minutes before I wrap the show. And that you were pretty much going into that area anyway. But what would be a big message that you would like to to leave with women who are listening, who may be experiencing this themselves or know someone who is, as an encouragement to know that there is life after you leave?
Don't define yourself by how you were treated as a child, if that's your case. Or if you didn't have a dysfunctional childhood and you only had dysfunctional relationships or a relationship, don't define yourself by what that man was trying to tell you you are. You know, I know what it is like. They call you names. They tell you you're not good enough. They call you a slut. They say you're not smart. All those things build up to physical abuse. Please know that you are so worthy and so smart and so good and so beautiful, and you have a spirit that is stronger than the bullcrap that you've been through. And all of us are capable, if you really dig down deep, if you believe in God or not, there's this place in your heart that all of us has that can make you not only a survivor, but if you find that place where you believe how wonderful you are, how unique you are, if you find that place, you can thrive and you can empower yourself. You don't be a victim anymore. You know, be a victor. It's, gosh, you know, I feel like I could talk about this for the next 24 hours. All of us have this, and accept the help, you know. Reach out. It's so hard to reach out outside of yourself, but take that strength inside you that we all have. I don't care if it's only 1% of you. There's something in there that can make you strong enough to get out, as long as you reach out also, you know, to counselors, to priests, to friends, to family. Use everyone to help you get out, you know, find things that you love to do. What also helped me was I love music and I love dancing, and I would force myself every day to listen to music that made me happy, and I forced myself every day to dance because that's what I do well, and it made me mm-hmm. feel good about myself. Just a little thing.
Yeah.
If you know.
Sure.
And it's so possible, as long as you grab for those positive things, even if it feels impossible, it's not impossible at all.
Yes,
women,
well, we're
going to
wrap it right there. Yes, we are. But I want to thank you again. I have all of about a minute left, and so I want to thank you again for being so courageous, for staying in the ring and letting other women know that this is a fight that you can take on so that you can survive, and not only that, but you can thrive. So you keep up the wonderful, wonderful work that you are doing. And spreading that love that comes so naturally in you and spreads over all of those in your life. I appreciate you again sharing this information with us, and I'll look forward to having you back again real soon. Okay? You have a wonderful day.
You too, Silver. I appreciate you. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank you, listeners, for being a part of this conversation today and listening. And I'm hoping, of course, that it will be vital information that you can either use or share to help someone else. It's a great mission for me to provide some awareness in this area that I know it's been around forever, but I feel very motivated to make sure that there's some additional noise being made about it. And so I'm hoping that we can do that. I want to wish you a wonderful day, and I'll look forward to talking to you again next time.